Hello and welcome to UFOs and Paranormal. Today I'm going to be interviewing Preston Dennett. My name is Kisara. I've been working with Preston for quite a few years. He's well known for his investigations with UFOs and the paranormal. Today we're going to talk about a new book that he's written and I've illustrated, actually. And it's about ghosts in Los Angeles. And I think I'm just going to jump right into it and let Preston talk about his book. Preston?
Thank you, Kisara. Yeah, it's called Ghosts of Greater Los Angeles. And it's coming out with Schiffer Books. And they actually requested me to write it. It's one of the few books that I've been requested to write as opposed to, you know, sending out and trying to get published. So that was kind of new for me. And they had to kind of convince me to write it, but I'm glad I did because I found a lot of really interesting stories. I kind of wanted to concentrate mostly on places that other people could go who are, you know, visiting the L.A. area or who are, you know, live in the area where they can go and see ghosts for themselves. So, for example, you know, I did a bunch of some of hotels that are haunted around here, some amusement parks, some, you know, state parks like Topanga Canyon. And also, you know, I did several private homes because those stories, I think, are just really fascinating and there's something about ghost stories. They have a beginning, a middle, and an end. There's romance, there's mystery, it's thrilling. So there's nothing like a good ghost story. So this book
That's
covers,
really wonderful. I wanted to remind the audience that they're welcome to call in and give us one of their ghost stories if they want to share while we're talking. So please feel free to call in. Just wanted to mention that. Sorry for interrupting.
No, that's all right. Yeah, I'm excited about the book. You know, I covered some local museums and missions, some cemeteries, and so it covers pretty much the whole range of the places you could look for ghosts if you wanted to go see one for yourself.
And you have written another book about it too, called California Ghosts. This book that you've written now is more concentrated in Los Angeles.
Right. The book California Ghosts covered, you know, cases all across the state, and this is more than an update. It's got, you know, lots of new cases of, you know, haunted theaters as well. So all within, I would say, about a 300, maybe even less, 200-mile radius, basically all within one day's driving distance.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, if you were to, like, chart them on an area, they're very widely spaced and kind of random. So it's not like there's really any true patterns to where ghosts appear other than, I think, the structures is what really attracts ghosts, the places where these events happen. But they're everywhere. Roadways. I've got some haunted roadways as well. So
I have a question.
Okay.
When you did the investigation of ghosts in Los Angeles, did you notice any variation between each case? Was it like, did the area just have a haunting, or did the hauntings follow people? I mean, it kind of makes me wonder why ghosts haunt, you know?
Right. No, I know what you're saying, and I think I understand your question. Is, you know, there is some, each area does have its own unique haunting, and each haunting has kind of started, I mean, there are patterns, don't get me wrong, but each haunting is unique in that it started in its own way, and it's ended in its own way, and it manifests in its own unique way, just like people do, pretty much. So there is a definite uniqueness to each haunting. In California, for instance, as opposed to other states, has a lot of hauntings of miners, settlers, bandits, Native Americans, this type of thing, as opposed to, you know, another area, which, you know, might have haunted monks or what have you. You know what I mean?
Yes. And the thing that I was curious about also is that the hauntings last for years. They don't go away.
Right. That is interesting. And no one, you know, the experts don't have that quite figured out. Now, when you talk about hauntings, I think it's important for people to know that there are two main types, and probably a lot more than that. But you can break them down into residual hauntings and active hauntings. And there is a difference, and it's pretty easy to tell, especially, you know, if you're going through a major haunting experience. A residual haunting is one that replays a death scene, or perhaps, you know, a murder scene or something like that. It doesn't have to be a death scene. It can be something very traumatic, something that leaves emotional impressions, apparently within the objects and the environment around where this event happened. That's a residual haunting. And you can tell that because these ghosts don't react to you. They won't look at you, and it plays the same event over and over and over. And technically, you know, in my mind, that's not really even a haunting. That's more like a, I don't know how to put it, a psychic imprint, perhaps, or even a place where the veil has worn thin and you can sense these sort of things. And you don't even have to be psychic. A psychic could sense it regardless.
Do you have an example in your book of a case like this?
I'm sure that there is one. Let me think for a second.
It kind of reflects what you're talking about in terms of residual hauntings.
Right. I'm going to say, yeah, probably in Chapter 1, the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. Now, this is probably one of the most haunted places in Los Angeles. I'm going to say that it probably is the most haunted place because there's some 100 ghosts there or more, 300, depending on who you talk to.
Holy moly.
And this chapter I put together, I think, you know, is probably the most comprehensive treatment of the haunting that's going on there. Because there's been a lot written about it and a lot talked about it. It's been on a lot of shows. But I put it all together, and I found some new witnesses as well that no one has ever heard of. A couple. So pretty amazing chapter. And a good example of the residual haunting, I think, is the mirror where Marilyn Monroe supposedly used to have in her room. And she would sit in front of it, and she would practice her acting, doing all her acting in front of this mirror before she actually went on stage before the camera. This is the story, right? And so they moved this mirror down to the lobby, and this is when people started to see Marilyn Monroe's reflection in it. Perfect example of a residual haunting. She stared into that mirror and poured her emotions into it, right? Just poured them in. And now you don't even have to be psychic or sensitive. Many people have sensed this and even photographed it as well. There's a couple cases of photographs. So,
wow.
Which I find, that's remarkable, huh?
So that kind of, like the residual haunting, kind of imprinted itself upon the mirror.
Exactly. And mirrors, it's funny. In this book, I found several cases where mirrors played a really crucial role in the haunting. There's a whole occult school on mirror magic. And there's not a lot written about it, but boy, one day I'm going to have to write a book on it because I'm collecting all these stories where mirrors are responsible for manifesting ghosts. You know, there was a movie just out about that, a thriller called Mirrors. And really scary. And it reflects, I think, you know, a certain aspect of truth that mirrors are kind of a doorway in a lot of cases. And in that case, at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, that's a perfect example of a residual haunting as opposed to the active hauntings that are also going on there. Which is a spirit that is tied to the location for some reason. And there can be, you know, 100 different reasons why spirits stay where they're at. It can be alcoholism. It can be they just love their house. It can be they want to be near a family member. It can be they have a message that they want to impart or they've left something undone in their life. So there's all sorts of reasons. I'm going to say the most common one, though, is that, and this, you know, honestly, I don't understand it, is that they don't know that they're dead. And that I kind of, you know, I've asked many researchers about this. I'd be interested to hear what you think. Because, you know, you've had some ghost experiences yourself, I know.
But yes, I have.
Apparently,
I have.
Don't know they're dead.
Yeah. I love your book because there's different instances and how the ghosts react to people that are visiting them. And I think, you know, on a scale from 1 to 10, there's ghosts at the level of 10 that are highly aggressive and highly protective of their territory. And then there's ghosts from the scale of 1 that are extremely passive and probably, you know, like you said, lonely and stuck.
Right. Well, if you want to see a ghost and have a really good chance, I would say the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel is a good starting point. And, you know, I've been there many times and was there just recently, and it is an old hotel. And you kind of walk, as you're walking through it, you can feel the vibration. I don't know, it's hard to describe, but it's an old hotel and you can feel it. And it's a place where you can not, you know, easily imagine ghosts appearing. And, you know, there was like Cliff, or Montgomery Cliff, he's an actor who died in the hotel. I believe he died in the hotel, or he died when he was living at the hotel. Anyway, this ghost has been seen by many people, and you know, including the staff, and I've got direct quotes. So it's really, and the witness I spoke with, she was at the hotel to stop there to make a phone call. Her friend actually wanted to make a phone call, and so she started to go in the lobby and looked up this grand staircase, right? And coming down it was this lady who looked like a 40s style actress with a pink taffeta dress and her hair all done up and her makeup all done up, and she could even hear the dress swishing, and she's like, wow, look at that lady, she's like straight out of the 40s, and she was kind of like, looks really out of place. And she turned to tell her friend, you know, touched her shoulder to point to this lady coming down the staircase, and when she looked back, there was no one on the staircase.
Was she solid?
No, totally solid.
Wow.
That's another thing about ghosts. Is I always thought that ghosts were transparent, you know, in most cases. In most cases of the people that I've talked to, and I've been talking to a lot lately, they're solid. They appear totally solid. So, I don't know. It's interesting. Maybe the veil between the worlds is getting less thin, or...
I have a tendency to agree with you. Because when I was a child, I saw them, but not totally solid. And just recently, maybe a year ago, I went to Vegas and I saw a solid ghost. And I must say, it was quite an experience.
Really? Yeah, I think I remember that. Someone stepped between you and your husband.
Yeah,
next to you.
I was there, and this woman was in my private space. You know how people, when they stand next to you, she was like standing right next to me. And it was like, why is this woman standing so close to me? And as soon as I looked over to see her, I actually heard a smack or a sound like she went away really fast and kind of disrupted space, you know? It was like a clapping sound.
Interesting. Yeah, ghosts can affect the physical environment, contrary to, you know, popular belief. They can move things around pretty well once they get good at it.
I think you wrote about that in your book also.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I did a lot of analysis in this book, not a whole lot, but towards the end I did a chapter, you know, analyzing the cases, which I like to do with all my books. And it's interesting to see the number of different ways ghosts manifest. I mean, there's just a huge variety of ways.
like moving around objects and talking to you or
right, or apparitions or smells or even through, you know, the appearance of animals or unusual behavior with animals.
Also,
and just like mirrors, as I was mentioning, I have a really interesting case which is in the book about a haunted bookshop. And this is a case where a haunting got started because apparently, how it began is these book owners, it's a bookshop that had a lot of occult books, right, and kind of psychedelic stuff.
Uh-huh.
And they got a call from a lady who said that she was a witch, or I'm not sure if she said she was a witch, but she ordered these books on black magic. And they're like, okay, we can get them for you. We can. And they ordered the books, and sure, because they do finding of rare books for people who are looking for books. So they ordered these books, the bookstore did, for this lady. And as soon as these books came, this massive haunting roared through this bookshop. You know, the lady was at the counter eating her sandwich when she was pushed off her stool by an entity, apparently. There was a strange draft that kept moving through the house. People kept getting locked in the bathroom. And this is something that comes up in many cases, and it's fascinating to me. Doors that should open and close, you cannot open them. For the life of you, you cannot open them. And this was a door that actually you could see the crack between the door and the latch. You know, a lot of doors shut tightly. This one didn't. And you could see that the latch was unhooked, and still they could not open the door.
That's wild.
That is really scary.
And it had to do with a reaction to books being ordered. How fascinating.
Right. Speaking of doors, let me just stick this in as an aside. You know, there's another case I worked on, which is in this book, actually, where they had the same problem. Their front door would become locked whenever the kids tried to get inside. This is another really complicated case, but I'll only mention that briefly because they also had one incident where their freezer door on their refrigerator, the freezer door would not open for 3 days. And it's a frost-free freezer. There's no reason why it wouldn't open other than this ghost that, you know, for them was very active. We might talk about that case later, but it's just weird, these doors things. But anyway, with this bookshop, they called up the woman and they're like, okay, pick up your books because we're having a lot of problems with it. And the lady's like, okay. And she picked up the books and the haunting didn't completely stop. At this point, it seemed to focus on a mirror that they had, which they had just bought, an antique mirror. So this is the thing. Antique objects can contain ghosts, or ghosts can be attached to them, I guess is the best way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And this haunting at this bookshop was not only caused by these books, but by this mirror as well, apparently, because they started having weird things going on with this mirror. They would walk by it and they'd sense this presence, and there was still this draft going on and things getting moved around. But finally, you know, they called up a ghost team who went in and investigated, and, you know, people were still getting locked in the bathroom, and the ghost team investigated it and couldn't really find a cause. And so they called the witch back and asked her to come. And she's like, okay, I'll come, because they thought she might be responsible for it. And so this lady who bought the occult books went back to the bookstore and started walking through it like doing a psychic reading. And she's like, and she came across the hallway to the mirror. She stopped in front of the mirror and she's like, this is it. This is where it's coming from. And the owner of the bookstore said that this lady started doing like some chanting and did some ritual over the mirror and for just a few minutes and walked away from it, and boom, the mirror shattered. And the lady said, get rid of it, you know, throw it away. That's where it was coming from. You won't have any more problems. And they didn't. They didn't. But what a dramatic case, huh?
That is dramatic, and again, there's the mirror.
Right.
She closed the door, you know?
got another case with mirrors where the person would only see the ghost in the mirror. Scary, huh?
Yeah.
You're looking. And another case, you know, or actually two cases like that. A lady saw a ghost in a mirror. She walked into the bathroom, and this really evil-looking man with a grin was staring at her from the mirror. She whirled around, and there was nobody in there. And I had three other accounts from this bathroom where, you know, the faucets were turned on and off, and the toilets would flush by themselves. So, and this is what I mean. Ghosts manifest in all kinds of ways.
I think that the more active it is, maybe the more dangerous it becomes.
Yeah, it can be. You know, ghosts, I tell people for the most part, ghosts aren't really dangerous. I think if you are going through a very active haunting where the ghost is pushing you, then it can be dangerous because people have been pushed downstairs, choked, and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare that someone's, you know, fatally injured. I've never certainly worked with a case like that, or God, I'm not sure I can even quote one.
When somebody explained ghost activity to me, it was that they have a frequency or an energetic frequency that's different from ours. And when they become more physical, their frequency has to be lowered way, way down, or they have to use like a person or a medium to bring themselves into this physical realm.
Exactly. So if a ghost is moving objects, you can pretty much bet that they have not been dead a very, very long time because they still have their vital body, or that they've somehow mastered the ability to do this, and which appears to be a spiritual talent that you can learn on the other side. And people who go out of their body, astral travelers, find it very, very, very difficult to move objects. But it is possible to do by stepping down your energy, exactly like you said. I haven't been able to do it, and I've done a lot of that out-of-body stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, have I ever tried, though. And so it was kind of an obsession with me for a year or two there. But never was able to do it.
It all seems kind of related, doesn't it?
In what way? What do you mean?
Astral projection, hauntings. Levitating.
It is connected. I think if you have an astral experience and you're flying around and levitating, you can see what levitation is and how it can happen to someone who's in the physical body, because your astral body sort of coincides with your physical body and you levitate. It's sort of a matter of bringing down the astral energies, I think, is how a lot of psychic stuff is explained. As far as ghosts, it's just a matter of stepping up your energy, if you're in the physical, to the point where you can perceive stuff on the astral plane. And on the astral plane, time moves differently. It's a lot faster, and you can kind of move into the past and the future, which explains all the psychic impressions and precognition and dreams that come true. So it's definitely all connected, and it's just very hard to figure out.
Do you find that in Los Angeles most of the hauntings are in older places with a history?
I would say yes. In the fact that almost all old places, honestly, are haunted. And if you were to bring a medium there, if you were to bring a medium around to any building that's over 50 years old, even homes for that matter, you're going to find that there are spirits around. I think there's a lot more spirits around than people realize. But definitely old buildings are much more inclined, especially the ones that are a couple of hundred years old. I did a chapter on the San Fernando Mission. And this is a building that's on the east side of the San Fernando Valley near the 5 freeway, and been around for hundreds of years and was one of the first buildings in this area, which now has I think it's the 7th largest population center in the world. But this area is amazing. You go to there, it's like stepping back in time, because they haven't changed it all that much in 300 years. And I got a lot of ghost cases from that place. A ghostly lady that wanders the halls. I got a first-hand case of a lady who saw a ghostly gaucho. Is that what you call him? A sort of a Mexican cowboy? She described him really vividly, too. He had big dark eyebrows and a big hat with a kind of a bolo tie and a really nice black jacket. And she actually gave a really vivid account of, you know, what it's like to see a ghost. And that's another place people can go, which is, you know, open to the public, where they can see a ghost. And a lot of people have seen it. This man that this lady saw is very well known to people who work there and to some of the visitors. There were a couple of other accounts I was able to locate, so it's interesting. Yeah, the older the place is, it's going to be haunted. Theaters. Now, here's something that I don't quite understand. I mean, I guess it's logical, but theaters are very, very haunted. I challenge anyone to find any type of a play, like a playwright theater where people put on plays as opposed to a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
These places are really haunted. The Ventura Theater, I have a little section on that in the book. I interviewed the guy who worked there as a janitor, and he'd stay there late at night, and which is the perfect place to see a ghost. And when he started working there, people asked him right away, or warned him. They said, oh, you're going to see ghosts, so, you know, just so you know, we've all seen them, and we all know about them. And he's like, I don't know about that. But sure enough, I think it was like his second night, maybe even his first, that he heard footsteps walking all around while he was cleaning up. He rushed, tried to follow them, but it was just footsteps, and that's mostly what he heard. So occasionally he'd hear noises and people talking and music even. So theaters are just like that. They're ghouls as well because there's so much activity.
Mm-hmm.
Can you
classify different ghosts? I mean, are there names for different kinds of ghosts? Would you go so far as to classify each one?
Well, some people have tried, you know, but you can only get so far with that. I mean, there are animal ghosts. That's easy to classify. There are just your spirits, your residual hauntings, and poltergeists is another classification, which I find very misleading and confusing, because some people say these are non-human ghosts. Some people say these are demons. Some people say that they're demons, but they were once human. Some people say they were never human. And that you get a lot of, you know, different opinions on poltergeists. My feeling, after a lot of research and a lot of thinking about it, is that poltergeists are not, in most cases, inhuman ghosts. I think that there probably are some inhuman spirits, demons, if you will, and the evidence is pretty persuasive. But poltergeist is usually a person who has strong mediumistic talent who doesn't know it and can't control it, and the ghosts are just frantic to communicate. Because a strong medium attracts ghosts like, you know, moths to light. They really do.
Yeah.
I've got cases in my book where people who... A couple of cases, I told their life story of growing up with a poltergeist, and then they become mediums, and they're seeing ghosts wherever they go. And neither of them are actually professional mediums, but they certainly have strong mediumistic talent. And
That's really fascinating. Well, I just want to remind everyone that they can call in to the radio station and give us their story if they have one to share. So, I was wondering about families. Is there famous ghosts in Los Angeles that are actually attached to families and, you know, the kitchen, parts of the, you know, the home where they show up the most?
Interesting. There is a case, which, you know, has a chapter in the book, which is the haunted laundry room. So ghosts will do sometimes are confined to areas. Usually, you know, they'll manifest throughout the home or in the area where a tragedy occurred, depending on if it's a residual haunting or not. But one case of a haunting that took place in, I believe, Woodland Hills, this lady had a laundry room, and she had these new washers in there, and she'd do her laundry, and each time she'd go in there, the laundry lid would be open. And she didn't think much of it at first, but then she'd close it, and she'd go back in there, and it would be open again. She'd think to herself, am I imagining this? This is crazy. How can this be happening? And so she made a point of it to watch and make sure that she did actually close the laundry lid, you know, on the machine. And she would go back, and sure enough, it would be opened. So she knew at this point something was going on. What's interesting about this case, to me, is there was no other activity going on in the house. That was it. And then, it was so pronounced, and it was constant. They never saw this lid go up, but it was whenever they put it down, it would be put up. And then one day, the lady goes in to do the laundry, and the process of it. But she came in at one point, and she's like, the lid is up. And she's like, I don't believe this. And she goes to close it down, and as she's doing it, she sees a person in the room. It's another lady, an older lady, who has got this scowling expression on her face, apparently scowling at her that she's closing the lid. And this is when it dawned on her that the ghost was angry at her for closing the lid of the washer. Why? Because in the old times, washers, you know, you had to let them dry out or else they'd grow mold. And this is what the lady, figured out. And so she told the lady, you know, this is a new washer. This is the year 2003. And you can close these washers and you don't have to worry about it. She said it out loud to the ghost, which is exactly what I recommend people do if they're involved in a haunting. You talk to it right after a manifestation or during, or even, you know, at the place of the haunting. I think it's most effective if you know the ghost is there. And this is what she did. She talked to it. And she explained to the ghost that there was no need to close the lid. And you know what? It worked. That ended the haunting. It's a remarkable case.
The hauntings do end.
Yeah, and you know, it's pretty rare that people end the hauntings that well. But definitely hauntings can be ended. And that's one very, very good way of doing it. There are other ways. You can hold a seance. It's basically the same thing. You're just trying to communicate with the ghost and let them know that there are better places they can be.
Fascinating. What's your favorite case?
Well, in this book, I'm going to say my favorite case. That's... Why do you do this?
They're all really good.
I'm going to say the case of Augustine, because it's just a fascinating case to me, where these two gentlemen moved into a home in the south part of Los Angeles. I forget the exact neighborhood, like Hawthorne or that area. It's just south of L.A. And immediately one of them started experiencing some haunting activity. He was doing the dishes, and in walks this person through the kitchen from the door outside, apparently, and into the living room. And it was this Mexican lady. And he's like, huh, well, that's odd. And he looked at the door. The door was closed. He didn't hear it open or close. And he runs into the living room, and there's no one there. He's like, hello, hello, hello? He's looking all through the house. There is no lady there. You know, his friend who was out at the store, his friend comes back, and he asks him, were you just in here? And his friend's like, no, I wasn't in here. He's like, oh, well, I thought I saw someone in the house. Weird. And so a little while later, exact same thing happens again. She comes in from the living room this time and walks through the kitchen to the outside. just really strange. And I think it happened one more time where she walked in And he turned around and looked at her, and she's looking straight at him. So this is not a residual haunting. He says, "Hello, may I help you? Who are you? May I help you?" And she just fades away right in front of him. So then he knew he was dealing with a ghost. So for a long time, he thought there was just this lady, right? This is something that, you know, people tell me several times. They assume they're dealing with a living person because the apparition looks so real. And this ghost continued to manifest mostly to this guy, Tony, and not to the roommate, who didn't believe in the ghost, until he moved out and this other roommate moved in, and the other roommate started having experiences. They would have objects moved around, the TV would be turned on and off, the remote control would be taken away. One thing that they noticed a lot was whenever their car keys would be hidden all the time, and they'd search and find them in the freezer or in the cupboard or, you know, in the middle of the bed, in places where they would not put them. So this ghost was absolutely playing with them. Not in a malevolent way, though. And one day, Tony went out, and he's like, "Gosh, you know, the shrubs in the back." This is just a really interesting case. Are all overgrown, the rose bushes. You know, I should probably trim those back, and maybe I could grow some really good roses, because they're big bushes. So he bought this book on how to trim rose bushes, and he dug out all the garden tools. And he's like, "I'm going to go trim the rose bushes." And he goes out in the back with his book and his garden, you know, the tools, and sets them all down and is like, "Okay, I'm going to do it right now." And he looks back down, and the garden shears are gone. They're just gone. It took him a half an hour to find them. They were in the closet underneath all the stuff.
She liked to play games.
Yeah, and apparently he had a lot of problems trimming these rose bushes, because she'd always hide the garden shears. He could never keep a hold of them. No matter where he put them, they'd be somewhere else. And this went on a long time. So it was a really interesting case, and they finally had to move out of the house because, you know, they just, times changed, and they had to move out. And
well,
they would
have
talk to
about
all the
10 minutes left. I was wondering if you wanted to tell everybody about your book and where they could buy it.
Yeah. This book is not quite available yet. It'll be out in a few months, you know, depending on how long the publisher takes. But it's published by Shipper Books, and you'll be able to order it at bookstores near you, hopefully. If it's not there, please have them order it. And also Amazon.com, of course, BarnesandNoble.com, and through my website, which I'm going to hopefully update soon. I've been neglecting that, but I'm on track to get that fixed. And I've got my other books on there. That's going to be, let me see, my 14th book. So there's all sorts of really cool stuff to check out there. I just got another book published on Bigfoot, which, gosh, I don't know if I've done a show on that yet recently, but we should.
Yeah, you should, because it all seems to be coming up. You have the Bigfoot book already, correct?
Yes, the Bigfoot book was, that's the latest one just published, and it's an amazing book. I was able to get the publishers to put in all sorts of photographs, so I got the best Bigfoot photograph. They paid for them well. So, your art is in there. In fact, you've got a couple of pictures in there.
Yes.
Which are, you know, based on actual cases.
Well, so, I haven't made a website yet for the paranormal, but I do have a website out for UFOs, and it's called kisara.weebly.com. Kisara is spelled K-E-S-A-R-A. And eventually I'm going to be designing a website for Preston that's interactive, where people can actually, you know, type in their experiences and things like that. That'll come in the future, hopefully.
Yes, I'm very excited about that. And right now, my website is just my name, PrestonDennett.com. So that's where people can go to get some of my books. I got excerpts of some of them. And another case, you know, I want to mention briefly before we run out of time is the Topanga Canyon State Park, because I just met some new witnesses, And I only have a really brief section on this in the book because I covered it extensively in my first book, California Ghosts. So I just did a summary in this new book, but I found some more cases, and they're all in the same area. The Topanga State Park has an entrance called Trippet Ranch, which is on Topanga Canyon Boulevard. You go up a street called Entrada, and you turn left, and this is the entrance to Topanga State Park, the biggest inner-city state park in the world, I understand. Perhaps Griffith Park is, but they've been arguing about it. My understanding is it's Topanga State Park. At any rate, I covered like four or five cases of Native American hauntings that are going on in this area, and I just recently found three more cases in this exact same area. So that's like eight cases, and it's just within a couple of, you know, 100 feet. Well, not feet, you know, a few acres there, but just where the entrance of the park is, mostly. And maybe a square mile would be more accurate where the whole real activity is most active.
But that's
really fascinating, fascinating story. There's all each house going down the row on this street has accounts coming out of it. You know, I, of course, can't give out the exact address, but one house, they said that they have the sound of furniture being moved in their basement or something, big banging noises. They had a pillow fly across the room. The house above them said that they have footsteps walking through their house that are so pronounced they can actually follow them through the house. The house above that said that they had a window that exploded by itself from going from the inside out, as if something was inside their house and wanted to get out. Very strange.
Wow.
And a really kind of a bizarre manifestation, which they felt was paranormal. They really did. And this window just exploded. And
area is really intense. I mean, it's had UFO.
Very intense.
Ghost stuff and ghost dogs
and weird stuff that, you know, you can't even classify, really.
And it has a history. There's a place that has a wonderful history with the Chumash Indians.
Right, which I think is part of the cause of this. There's one case, another house. This is in the same row of houses, right along Entrada and, you know, the entrance to the park there. This is the new case that I just learned. There's a haunting going on which appears to be residual, in that it's a reenactment of a battle that took place between the Chumash Indians and a group of cowboy bandits of some sort, where they just hear all the noises of, you know, the gunfire and the shouting and bodies falling, and they're trying to figure out what it was until they actually recognize the sounds.
Wow.
Very interesting. That one's just manifesting by sound alone. So, I mean,
all the listeners, if you're in California and you're near Topanga, you should go out there and check it out. You might see a ghost or a UFO.
Yeah, it's true. I covered cases of haunted cemeteries, like a forest lawn, or another case where this guy went to all of these various cemeteries throughout L.A., you know, a couple of them, and I recorded EVP, electronic voice phenomena, which really needs a book in itself to explain, but that's a really cutting-edge area of ghost research right now, where people record the voices of ghosts on your audio recorders. And it's just fascinating to me, because ghosts have the ability to affect electronic instruments like lights. This is something that they can apparently do pretty easily. So it's a very promising area of research, and I think this is how we're going to eventually start really communicating with ghosts.
That's wonderful. I think next time when I do interview you, it would be really wonderful to talk about how a person can become a researcher and how they can start investigating on their own, and like steps that they can take to investigate ghosts and the equipment and everything. It's just so fascinating, and there's a method to investigation and interviewing people. It's a really wonderful, you know, field to
research. And it's so cool. it's crying for help. And it's crying for more researchers because it's exploding and it's going to go mainstream with the technology and the money that's being put forth towards it and the interest that there is with it. It's growing by leaps and bounds. So it's definitely the time. And all it takes really is the interest. That's how I got started, and I've learned a lot over the years. But yeah, we'll definitely have to do a show on that one of these days.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Preston. We've been talking to Preston Dennett. This is UFOs and the Paranormal, and my name is Kisara. And I'm really glad that you came to listen to us, and we're always welcome feedback. So let us know what you think. And thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful evening, and if you happen to encounter a ghost, just give them a kind word and tell them everything's all right.